And good morning. I feel as if I'm going to bring the speakers around and introduce them each to you individually. This is the Jazz in Pittsburgh session. And in case you haven't figured out by now, there is quite a lot of jazz in Pittsburgh. Jazz came up from New Orleans, came up the river to Pittsburgh. There are a couple of announcements I've been asked to make. The silent auction closes at 10:40 a.m. this morning. That's 10:40 a.m. So this session will conclude at 10:15, and that'll leave you about 20, 25 minutes to get those last bids in. The session in this room at 1:30, the session title is Opera, Orchestras, and Ephemera. The schedule of the presentations has been changed. Unfortunately, Phil Carley is not able to be here to present his talk on Madame Butterfly excerpts. But the upside is that this leaves more time for Mike Beal, who will be the lead-off speaker in that session. Now pay attention, because there will be a quiz. Carlos Pena is going to speak on Pittsburgh jazz recordings at 33 and 45 RPM. Carlos is born and raised in Pittsburgh, and he holds master's degrees in ethnomusicology and library science from the University of Pittsburgh, where he works as the assistant music librarian. His writing has appeared in Notes, which is the journal of the MLA, and the ARSC journal. He also works as a music librarian at the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh and can be heard as a guitarist around the Pittsburgh area. Carlos Pena and Pittsburgh jazz recordings at 33 and 45 RPM.
Thank you, and good morning. In 2007, I wrote an MA thesis titled Pittsburgh Jazz Records and Beyond, 1950 to 1985. Because a lot has been said about the many musicians from Pittsburgh who left and became world famous, but at the same time, many great musicians opted out of the hectic pace of New York City living and life on the road, instead choosing the relative comforts of Pittsburgh, a prosperous city, but with a slower pace of living and plenty of space to raise a family. With the lack of major recording companies in Pittsburgh, local musicians used small, independent studios and record labels to make records. The result was actually a pretty prolific local record industry. My main focus is on jazz recordings, and a lot of these have not been documented in standard discographies. I feel that there are some really special recordings of local jazz, and that it's important to document this part of Pittsburgh's musical history, although I know that this work will never truly be finished. So my thesis is available through PittCat, Pitt's library catalog, so you can read the full text online. It gives historical and descriptive information about the music. But the best part is the indexed discography, in which I documented as many local jazz recordings as I could find. Another premise of my thesis was a suspicion of the label jazz, when I know that a lot of the musicians played other kinds of music too. So if you only have a jazz discography, then you miss out on all this other music that happens to fall in different categories, which in this case is usually R&B and gospel. And I think it's important to take all these kinds of music into account when you're studying it. But today, given my time constraints, I'm only going to focus on the jazz recordings. First, I'll give you an overview of my master's thesis, and then I'm going to cover some interesting things that I've learned about since the time that I wrote it. Okay? So the center of jazz in Pittsburgh, historically, was the Hill District, which is right next to where we are now. We're sort of on the eastern edge of downtown Pittsburgh. The next neighborhood to the east, going up that big hill, is a large neighborhood called the Hill District. During World War I, the Hill's African-American population increased dramatically with the influx of Southern migrant workers seeking employment, which they found in the steel mills. With a new prosperous working class, the Hill became a mecca for culture and nightlife. Some called the Hill the crossroads of the world. It was the home of the Pittsburgh Courier, one of the nation's most vital African-American newspapers. And until the 1968 riots, it was where anyone, from locals to celebrities who happened to be in town, would go to find out what was really happening in Pittsburgh. The Hill's most legendary jazz rooms, where locals played as well as name artists on tour, were the Crawford Grill and the Hurricane Lounge. The Crawford Grill was owned by Gus Greenlee, who also owned the Pittsburgh Crawfords Negro League baseball team. Everyone who was anyone played Crawford's Grill. However, the Hurricane specialized in Hammond organ groups. Both clubs were about a mile from where we are right now. So people visited from all over, so the scene in the Hill was integrated and all races were welcome, while the same could not necessarily be said for the white-owned jazz clubs and theaters here in downtown Pittsburgh. The Black Musicians Union, Local 471, headquarters in the Hill, was also a very important part of the jazz scene. This was where touring musicians from the name bands would jam with the local players. And for a great deal more information about the history of jazz in the Hill District, I would refer you to my friend Coulter Harper's 2011 dissertation titled The Crossroads of the World, A Social and Cultural History of Jazz in Pittsburgh's Hill District, 1920 to 70. Okay, so here we see the Crawford Grill. This is Crawford Grill number two. The original one was actually down the street. The first Crawford Grill burned down in 1951, I believe. Crawford Grill number two was really the best remembered location where everybody played. Okay, this photo, as well as the other historic photos I'm about to show you, are from the Teenie Harris archive. Teenie Harris was the legendary photographer for the Pittsburgh Courier, who created an incredible body of work documenting African-American life in the Pittsburgh area. So moving up to the Hurricane, here's Jimmy Smith and his trio playing there. Here's local organist Ruby Young playing at the Hurricane with Chuck Austin on trumpet and Bobby Boswell on bass. So as an aside, growing up, Chuck Austin was somebody that I got to listen to a lot playing in the clubs, and he had a really unique and amazing trumpet style. Later, when I got to know him a little bit, he turned out to be the nicest gentleman you could hope to meet, very encouraging to all the young musicians. Bobby Boswell, the bass player, is one of a few Pittsburgh musicians who got picked up by Max Roach's band in the late 60s and ended up touring and recording with Max around that time. Okay, moving up to the Musicians Club in the Black Musicians Union, here we see the band of local pianist Walt Harper playing there, and the trumpet player with the shades is Tommy Turrentine. Okay, with a few exceptions, commercial recording of Pittsburgh jazz really began in earnest in the 60s on the Gateway label. Gateway was a downtown company that produced records of really almost all kinds of music. The series of jazz LPs was dominated by the small groups of trombonist Harold Betters and pianist Walt Harper. Walt Harper's group had originally been recorded in Pittsburgh in 1952, backing up Pittsburgh vocalist Eddie Jefferson, which came out on 278s on the Hi-Lo label, which were reissued by Savoy in the 70s. Harper and Betters both recorded a string of albums for Gateway in the 60s before starting their own labels in the 70s. Their albums demonstrate the easygoing, accessible styles of these musicians that allowed them to become Pittsburgh's most commercially successful local jazz artists. So there you see Harold Better's first album at the Encore, which Encore was a jazz club in the Shady Side neighborhood of Pittsburgh. There's a lot of these records around. If you go to pretty much anywhere in Pittsburgh that has used records, you're gonna find some Harold Better albums on Gateway. Perhaps the most interesting Gateway jazz album is a 1963 Charles Bell Trio album recorded at the Carnegie Institute, which is up the road in the Oakland neighborhood near where the Carnegie Library and Museums are. This Pittsburgh pianist had already made a few albums in New York for Atlantic and Columbia in a style that was influenced heavily by John Lewis and the MJQ. Here you see his trio album that he made for Gateway. Gateway also released 45s, mostly containing, or jazz 45s, mostly containing songs from the LPs of Harper and Betters. But there are also a few unique one-off singles by other jazz artists from Pittsburgh, like organist Bobby Jones and drummer Jerry Betters, who was Harold's brother. The Deuce is Wild was a local combo that in the 50s released a series of 45s on their own label called Deuce is Wild. The band's personnel consisted of premier local white musicians led by the saxophonist Flo Cassinelli, often including Pittsburgh stalwarts such as the drummers Spider Rondinelli and Roger Ryan, and pianist Bobby Negri. Bobby Negri was the brother of local guitar master Joe Negri, who's better known as Handyman Negri from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Like most of the Gateway jazz recordings, the Deuce is Wild records show a rather conservative, swing-influenced brand of small group jazz, but always tasteful and impeccably performed. In my thesis, I had four Deuce is Wild 45s. Since that time, I've come across two more, one of which features Jeannie Baxter, a vocalist who, in the 60s, released a local LP of standards of her own. And here we see the Deuce is Wild performing at the Crawford Grill number 2 in this photo. A virtuoso with a long string of local releases was organist Gene Ludwig. Ludwig's style featured heavily swinging, no-holds-barred organ improvisations in an intense but accessible soul jazz style. In my opinion, Gene was one of those rare jazz artists who came across best on 45s rather than LPs. 45s were usually the part one and part two kind of 45s, if you know what I mean. Most of his records feature his trio with Jerry Bird on guitar and Randy Gillespie on drums. He released two LPs locally in the 60s, one on the Hill District-based label Travis, and another on his own label, G. Lou, which is what you see there in the photo. His string of at least 8 locally produced 45s, in addition to other singles that he released on labels like Atlantic and Mainstream, are a testament to his Hammond mastery that was always a hit on the Chitlin circuit. Now, one single that I didn't know about when I was writing my thesis is the only published recording that I know of from the Hill District Jazz Clubs, and that's Gene's trio, Life at the Hurricane, which is an extremely rare and obscure record, which I'm gonna play you. In the interest of time, I have to cut right to the climax of this one, but here's Gene Live at the Hurricane on the Hill. Thank you. For the research for my thesis, I interviewed not only Gene, but also pianist Frank Cunamundo and saxophonist Nathan Davis, two artists whose careers in Pittsburgh were documented with series of LPs from the late 60s through the 70s. These records reflected changes that were happening in jazz with the advent of modalism, fusion, and funk. During this time, Frank Cunamundo, who had toured in the 60s with the Billy May Orchestra, released a half dozen albums on his own label, which was called Mondo. And here we see Frank's very first LP with the trio, including Spider Rondinelli on the drums, Ron Fudoli on the bass. This is a really nice album. It's kind of a Bill Evans trio influence, but a lot darker and more brooding kind of sound to it. Nathan Davis was originally from Kansas City. He spent most of the 60s in Europe before coming to Pittsburgh in 69 to start the University of Pittsburgh's Jazz Studies program. In the 70s, he released two albums on a local label called Segway before making three more on his own label called Tomorrow International. Frank's and Nathan's albums are pretty well known for local recordings and highly sought after by collectors. So here you see Nathan's first LP, the first album he made after returning to the States from Europe. Some of Frank's and Nathan's albums, as well as a bunch of other local recordings, feature the drumming of the legendary Roger Humphreys, who in the 60s was a member of Horace Silver's quintet, recording for Blue Note, including the celebrated Song for My Father session. Roger apparently decided to escape the rigors of the road, and by the late 60s was settled back here in Pittsburgh. In 77, he made a 45, which is, to my knowledge, the only vinyl recording that came out under his own name. The record is two songs by guitarist Luther DeJarinette that heartily embrace funk and fusion. This seems to be a rather unknown record outside of local circles, but it's one of my favorite Pittsburgh jazz releases, and you'll learn that I have like a lot of musicians from my generation, I heartily also embrace the fusion and the funk, so my apologies to all you swing purists out there. Okay, I wish we had more time to listen. Now I'm going to move on to some records that I've learned about since I wrote my thesis. Some of the more interesting ones include an earlier album by trombonist Al Dow before he partnered with vocalist Etta Cox, which you see pictured there on your left. Another one is a jazz album by pianist Vince Lashide, accompanied by bassist Jimmy DiGiulio. Lashide had once toured with Glenn Miller, but he came back to Pittsburgh and became best known as the stadium organist for the Pittsburgh Pirates and Penguins sports teams. This is a live album that he made in a local restaurant. It's quite good. An interesting 45 that I've come across more recently is one by the Charles Bell Trio, made for the obscure Belmar label. The tunes on here, Summertime and Take Five, were also recorded on Bell's Gateway LP, but the versions on the 45 are different, brighter performances with, in my opinion, a nicer recording quality. My good friend, Jason Molyneux, AKA Jay Malls, he's a local music historian and record collector who I have to acknowledge because he's really taught me a lot. But his research has traced this single to 1963 in the Sidemen as bassist Mike Taylor, who was a longtime first call bassist in Pittsburgh, and drummer Alan Blairman, who originally was from Pittsburgh, and went on to work with Albert Eiler and Mal Waldron, among other big name people. Jason put one side of this 45 on YouTube, which you can listen to. This actually contains some of this, especially the summertime, contains what I, to me, is some of Charles Bell's finest playing that I've heard on record. Okay, originally in my thesis, as far as local university jazz recordings go, I had one LP from Duquesne University made in the 1960s. It's sort of a progressive big band album under the leadership of local jazz patriarch Ray DeFade. It's extremely rare. The only copy I've ever seen of it belongs to the Carnegie Library. I also, in my thesis, I had one University of Pittsburgh jazz album and three from Carnegie Mellon University, all from the 70s. I did fail to include a 1970s LP on the Mark label by Duquesne's Jazz Ensemble that features all original material, as well as the saxophonist Eric Leeds, who has gone on to a stellar career playing with Prince and other big name leaders. I also came across what must be the first and more interesting published recording of the Pitt Jazz Ensemble shortly after Nathan Davis arrived here in Pittsburgh. It includes a number of local heavyweights like saxophonist Kenny Fisher and trombonist Nelson Harrison, and a number of original tunes by Davis as well as local pianists Don DePaulis and Joe Kennedy. And this is extremely rare and hard to find. This is actually the only copy I've ever seen. And you can see it's a little rough around the edges there. Okay, the last thing I'm going to talk about is an album by the pianist Johnny Costa, who had recorded in New York in the 50s in an Art Tatum-influenced style before returning to Pittsburgh to work in TV and radio. Costa is best known to the world as the musical director and pianist for the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood television show. In the 70s, he recorded an album with a local trio, bassist Jimmy DiGiulio and drummer Roger Ryan, titled Costa Living. And this album does not seem to be documented or really known by jazz discographers. It was produced by WQED, the local public television station. Here you see the cover. It was recorded by Engel Associates Recording, a local recording firm run by Paul Engel, who recorded albums for countless local amateur organizations. These are low-budget kind of albums. Most of them don't have dates, but a few of them do have dates, and using the dates along with the sequential numbers that Paul Engel applied, we can then use this information to get approximate dates for the albums that we don't have actual dates for. So using that approach, we can trace the Johnny Costa album to sometime between 73 and 77. The first Pitt jazz album that I just finished talking about is also an Engel recording and can be dated to between 69 and 72. So I hope I've given you a good overview of the local jazz recording industry and some idea of the vibrant scene that thrived in Pittsburgh. The picture gets even more interesting when you expand your view to include non-jazz music like pop, R&B, and gospel. Local veterans sometimes refer to Pittsburgh as the land of the giant killers due to the uncommonly high level of musicianship among local musicians. And the work of these musicians deserves to be documented for future generations. This is my part of the effort to contribute to that task in return for the joy and enrichment that I've received from it. And if I may, I'm just going to end my talk like an episode of Mr. Rogers, and that is with just the sound of Johnny Costa playing the piano from that album that I finished talking about a second ago. This is the one Fred Rogers tune that appeared on that album. It's such a good feeling. Thanks, everybody. How about a shout for Lenny the sound man? We couldn't do any of this without Lenny.
Thank you, Carlos.